Hey everybody, Simon Rettner here. Welcome to The Checkout. Before we bring you our program with the saxophonist Kamasi Washington, recorded in Antwerp, Belgium, Jazz Middelheim, we have an announcement to make. The Checkout is teaming up with WBGO and the French Embassy to present our second concert in our series at New Blue in Alphabet City, New York City. We're going to be presenting an awesome French-American ensemble called Thiefs, blending hip-hop, electronic music, and politically pointed spoken word, featuring the bassist Keith Whitty and the French saxophonist Christophe Panzini, along with David Fraser Jr., the author-poet Gael Faye, and Aaron Parks on piano. In addition to that, we're also bringing you a concert by the Japanese artist known as Big Yuki, who basically epitomizes what modern jazz sounds like today, drawing from influences from Kenny Kirkland to Chopin and A Tribe Called Quest in his new recording. It's called Reaching for Chiron. Two incredible ensembles on one night on Friday, November 2nd, and you can get information about tickets at newblue.net. What you're listening to right now is the latest recording from Kamasi Washington's mega album, Heaven and Earth, The Space Traveler's Lullaby. Kamasi Washington's Heaven and Earth tour reaches New York City this Tuesday with a stop at Brooklyn's Barclay Center, opening for Florence and the Machine. Over the summer, I got a chance to speak with the Herculean saxophonist about some of his most important early music influences, from Art Blakey to Busta Rhymes to an amazing orchestral choral composition by Stravinsky, all on stage during a conversation recorded at Jazz Middelheim in Antwerp, Belgium. We bring you that conversation now. And we are at the 37th annual Jazz Middelheim Festival here in Antwerp, Belgium, Den Brunt Park. Let's hear it for Kamasi Washington.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
We are not going to be listening to Kamasi Washington's music, actually. We're going to be listening to music that has inspired him and his composing and his right as an artist and a musician. And so let's just let the music do the talking, beginning with, I'm not even going to tell him what I'm going to play. We're just going to listen to a little bit of it, and we're just going to go from there.
All right, cool.
So that isn't Kamasi Washington, but it's part of a music that he has been a part of. First of all, I just want to ask him, do you recognize that performance?
Yeah, that's Terrace playing the instrumental that ended up being for free.
And that is actually our recording of that performance. It was the debut release party of the epic, and I had the opportunity to be there on May 4th, 2015 at the Regent Theater.
Yeah.
Which is still archived today on NPR Music. Rewind 3.5, a little plus years. That was such a monumental year for you. I think the heavens kind of opened in a way and shined a light on you. We were listening to also, I should say, For Free, featured on Kendrick Lamar's remarkable recording of 2015, To Pimp a Butterfly. Kamasi Washington wrote some of the arrangements for some of that music and is also featured on the video, actually, in the background. But you have said that this record changed music. This was also the same year that changed your life. Is that just a coincidence?
It was something that had been brewing for a long time. There was a scene in L.A. that that for, I mean, before I was even in it, that had been inspiring young musicians to really kind of create something special. And it was kind of a weird kind of juxtaposition where it was because it was a bit overlooked by the, you know, on a global level, we were able to kind of keep a bit of freedom, you know, and that, like, no one was really paying attention to us. And then Kendrick came along and kind of blew the top on the off of it. And all of a sudden, you know, the world kind of starts to see these gems, people like Terrace Martin and, you know, Thundercat, Flying Lotus, you know, Brandon Coleman, myself, Miles Mosley, all these people who have been coming up in this scene that was, I felt like, really vibrant for a long time. So I think it was something that was coming. I think it was, you know, music is a important part of the world culture, you know, and I think that every place has something to contribute. And I feel like Los Angeles is a unique city, and it had something to contribute to music that may have been overlooked for a long time. But when Kendrick put out To Pimp a Butterfly, it really kind of, like I said, it kind of popped the top on the artistic expressions that were happening in Los Angeles.
And you absolutely think you benefited from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole world did. But yeah, it definitely helped me in my own, you know, in my own art and in my career, for sure. When shit hit the fan, is you still a fan? When shit hit the fan, is you still a fan? That gave us Billie Jean, you say he touched those kids? When shit hit the fan, is you still a fan? The ghost of Mandela, hope my flow stay propelling. Let my word be your earth and moon, you consume every message.
So we're chilling here with Kumasi Washington at Jazz Middleheim, here on the Checkout from WBGO, here reviewing some amazing music that has inspired Kumasi Washington over the years. And we'll continue on with, actually, one last thing. We know what Thundercat told me about you?
Oh, what did he say? What did he say?
He compared Kumasi Washington to a crystal in a deep cavernous cave forming into like a majestic object. And after thousands of years of grinding in the cave, he's ready to appear in the world and ready to shine. Basically, I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
I'm glad he said a crystal, not a coal. Like.
All right, so this next piece of music. Washington, you have a lot of amazing, great stories. I think this might be my favorite, though. I can definitely identify with this story growing up in Oakland, California, in the inner city, and where no one was really listening to jazz at all. But where did you discover this recording, and how did it have legs?
I was about 11 years old, and maybe 12 years old. I had an older cousin. My dad is a musician, so he had been trying to get me into jazz my whole life. But you know how it is, like, you don't want to listen to the music that your parents listening to, you know, I don't know. And I had an older cousin that I looked up to, who was like my brother's best friend, and he gave me this tape that had a bunch of Art Blakey and Lee Morgan songs on it. This was one of them. And I liked the whole tape, but the thing about this song is that Tribe Called Quest sampled that song on this song called Excursions.
Back in the days when I was a teenager, before I had status and before I had a pager, you can find the abstract listening to hip hop. My pops used to say it reminded him of bebop. I said, well, daddy, don't you know that things go in cycles?
Wait, I remember just hearing that, and that was like my first time realizing what a sample was. I was like, oh, that's the Tribe Called Quest song. And he was like, nah, they took that song from this. And I was like, oh, wow, is that what they do? I remember going back to my little elementary school, and I grew up in the inner city, and you know, the kids in my school, they didn't really know about jazz. They didn't know enough. They didn't know to dislike it or like it. They didn't really know what it was. And so when I showed them this record, or played this tape for them, they all wigged out too. And all of a sudden, like, they had this whole school full of Art Blakey fans who were all trying to borrow my little mixtape and dub it, you know. And it was it was a cool little introduction to jazz.
Chant for Boo is the name of the tune you just heard, in its original form. Art Blakey and the Messengers from the 1973 recording. Art Blakey, Woody Shaw, Cedar Walton, Michael Howell. Kamasi Washington here joins us at Jazz Middleheim, reviewing some music that has touched him over the years and thus touched all of us via Tribe Called Quest. This is a nice segue for this next piece of music that I'm going to share. Yeah.
Hit you with no delaying, so what you saying, yo? Silly with your ice, grilly with the dilly, yo. What? When I be on the mic, yes, I do my duty, yo. While up in the club like we while in the studio. You know when the violin, baby, really and truly, yo. My main thug, villain ain't Julio, he moody, yo. What? Type of brother that'll slap you with the tulio. Yo. Wow. Real shook, scared to death, act fruity, yo. X that, looking shorty, she a little cutie, yo. The way she shake it, make me want to get all in the booty, yo.
Put your hands where my eyes could see, Busta Rhymes, When Disaster Strikes. This is kind of a funny story, too, because after that mixtape went viral, then what happened? You became a snob.
Well, what happened is, you know, I got really into jazz and I started playing the saxophone. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you're a kid, you kind of, for me at least, everything that I got into, I kind of like dove in head first. And so I had a little time period in my life where all I wanted to listen to was jazz. So I was like, I kind of like cut myself off from all the other music that I had been listening to since I was a kid. And
cut yourself off from your friends, too, and your family.
Well, I mean, I definitely was like consumed with music.
You created a cave for yourself.
Kind of.
A jazz cave.
Yeah. I definitely like fully immersed myself in it. And my friend Robert Miller, actually, when this record came out, he got it and he played it for me. And that's kind of what brought me back to hip hop. I was probably in, like, I don't know, ninth grade, something like that.
Now for something completely different. You know, it gives me great pleasure to have Busta Rhymes next to Igor Stravinsky in the same show.
They should be right next to each other.
They should be, right?
Yeah.
Symphony of Psalms, composed in 1930 by the great Igor Stravinsky, actually premiered in Brussels for the first time. It made its musical premiere. Shout out to Belgium in that respect. Tell me about this piece of music. Why does this mean something to you?
People ask me a lot, like, what kind of inspired me to want to add, like, choir and voices to a lot of my music, and it was this piece of music is really one of my favorite, it's one of my favorite pieces of music of all time, and I used to always just kind of dream about, like, being able to play in an orchestra that was playing this, and somehow the conductor let me take a solo over this music. And so when I started, you know, thinking about what I wanted to do for my own records, this song was a great inspiration for me as far as, like, instrumentation and just how I wanted to use the human voice.
Also, a little more deeper musical question, if you want to nerd out a little bit. The piece of music has a section going between whole and half steps, representing kind of an octatonic scale, which was employed by many tenor saxophonists, actually probably the most important tenor saxophonist in this music's history, from John Coltrane to Michael Brecker. Did you identify that, or did that come later?
Yeah, he's a lot. He's talking about a diminished scale, and but Stravinsky, he definitely goes there a lot. You know?
John Coltrane often talked about the Rite of Spring also being monumentally important to him, right?
Yeah, I don't want to get too technical, but yeah, octonic scales are kind of in three keys at once, and so. Think about stuff like Giant Steps and a lot of other songs like that. That's kind of the concept of a lot of modern jazz comes from that idea. Yeah.
This is what you and Terrace Martin and maybe Robert Glasper were geeking out about when you were going to jazz school early in the game.
Yeah, I think that music, more so than anything, it kind of conveys a feeling, and then you learn devices and techniques like that, and you learn scales and theories to kind of help you translate the feelings that you have in your head. And so, like, you learn certain scales that give you more freedom. And so, when you learn how to use a diminished scale, it gives you freedom to kind of create more freely than I guess you do when you're using diatonic scales, like seven note scales. So, yeah, I guess, yeah, we geek out over stuff like that.
And so, as you have obviously continue to employ, or should I say deploy, choruses and orchestras behind your music, your most recent release, Heaven and Earth. Do you feel like you're getting better as an arranger, composer, all that, or were you always good at that stuff?
It's what I studied in school at UCLA. I studied ethnomusicology and emphasis on composition. So it was something that, I got into Stravinsky when I was in high school. When I started high school, I went to a music high school. It was called Hamilton Music Academy. And it was my first time really getting to know, like, ever meeting kids who were classical musicians, like, who, like, really wanted to play in orchestras. And there was this French horn player who was playing on the piano. He was playing he's playing this piece from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet. And it kind of sounded like McCoy Tyner. It was like, it was like this thing that sounded familiar to me. I was like, oh, wow, what's that? He's like, oh, that's Prokofiev. And then he started giving me records. And I remember he gave me The Rite of Spring because he thought I would like it. And it just blew my mind. And
caused riots at one point.
Yes, it caused riots, yeah.
Shout out to Carnegie Hall, whatever year that was. We're here with Kamasi Washington at Jazz Middleheim. Thank you for joining us. We're just having a little playlist here with my old buddy Kamasi Washington, and we're basically exploring music that has influenced his development over all of these years. Since you were talking about jazz and classical music and jazz, how many people are familiar with the pianist Cameron Graves?
Well, I met Cameron in high school, and it was funny. We both were really in love with McCoy Tyner. And when I met Cameron, it was like, he was the first person I met that could, first piano player I met that could play like McCoy Tyner. And that was like a big deal to me.
And as Ricky Washington, your father, who has been on the road with you for the past 3.5 years, told me, you immediately became friends. And your passion of music kind of reached a new pinnacle in a way, because you were both in between classes, napping in the practice room.
We both were in and practicing a lot. And we used to practice at lunchtime. The whole falling asleep in the practice room thing happened in college. and that was like late at night. We'd be back there practicing and just fall asleep and wake up and the lights would be off and the doors would be locked. But when we became friends in high school, we used to call each other and see how long we'd been practicing. And like we would show each other patterns and scales. And like, you know, Cameron has he has perfect pitch. And so he was always like learning solos and stuff like that. And so he'd come to school every day with some new thing that he had figured out. And it was kind of like, it was cool to kind of get a new little tidbit from him every once in a while.
Let's showcase and shine some light on another member of the West Coast Get Down right now. So what we just heard, though, was?
That was Brandon Coleman, Giant Feelings.
Hot off the presses, right? Just released.
Yeah, just released. Yeah.
And one of the last members of the West Coast Get Down to finally come out with their project, right?
Yeah, I think this is the last project that is coming out from those sessions at King Size back in the day.
Are you guys familiar with the story of the EPIC and how it was made? Basically, all of the musicians that make up the West Coast Get Down in LA were childhood friends. Many of them brought together by Kamasi's father, who's a teacher, Ricky Washington, and a few other really influential teachers. These kids grew up together, became adults together, and at one point broke with no money, maybe almost destitute, I don't know, but pooled all of your cash that you had to rent out a recording studio in LA and live in it for an entire month while everyone plays on everyone else's record. And that is how the EPIC came to be. Did I get it right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So anyway, this is the last album from that historic In the Bunker session.
Yeah. I mean, there's some other music that we did that hasn't gotten released, but this is the last project.
Kamasi Washington has two passions in life, basically. Music and Street Fighter, the video game. And so hopefully our audience will be hearing that tonight from Kamasi Washington's most recent release, Heaven and Earth, Street Fighter Mas. Kamasi Washington actually did challenge me to a match on the first day I met him. Like, I was pretty good at the game. I also grew up in the inner city. Like, Street Fighter, I don't know, Street Fighter 2 especially, it was like the first six-button video game with these really kind of advanced techniques, and it sort of like broke open the video game realm for being like the first kind of complicated video game with all of these maneuvers and stuff. People would get into fights all the time if you lost and punched the screen, and you know, people would lose considerable amounts of money. It was like a Street Fighter II culture happening in California. I imagine that it was around that time when you fell in love with the franchise.
Yeah, that's back when I used to have arcade games and all the laundromats and like the liquor store, and so you had kids, you know, scouring the house for change so they can go play these video games all day. It was like before we had consoles, you know.
I would dream about, you know, the Ryu. Like, I would, because it was so hard to do. It took me a while.
It was a great equalizer, too. Like, for me growing up, you know, I grew up in like a rough neighborhood, but, you know, you can go play Street Fighter, and like, that was the only chance you get to like beat up on a dude that you were really afraid of in real life.
Like, you annihilated me. I remember when I played you, it was like, oh, why am I even playing you? This is a joke.
It's okay. I annihilate everyone.
So, with this composition, Street Fighter Mas, did you have one of its characters in mind? Do you want to?
I mean, it was kind of like, it was in my mind, it was kind of a bit of a funny thing. I just thought it was funny that, like, when I was a kid, I used to tell everyone I was the best in the world. I used to show up to the arcade, and I was like, part of the fun was just like kind of, you know, we call it talking smack. And you would just kind of like talk stuff to each other. And so I used to wish that I had a theme song. So when I walked into the arcade, they could play my theme song and it'd be like, oh God, this dude is here again. And so that's what I was thinking when I was writing. It was just like, you know, I don't know.
What was your evolution? Like, what characters did you master first? And like, what was your development?
Ryu was my first character and has been my, you know, most steady character. But a couple of different variations of the game. I got into Blanca, I got into Guile. In this new version of Street Fighter V, I play Falk, and I play Ken. I don't know, I play a lot of different characters.
Street Fighter in general is a huge deal to Kamasi. In fact, at his surprise CD release party just a few weeks ago in LA, it came with the new Street Fighter game where everyone can play, right?
Oh yeah, we had a tournament at the album release party.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us, listening to Kamasi Washington reflect on his life and his artistry. We thank the folks at Jazz Middleheim for making this possible. You're listening to The Checkout from WBGO. Thanks for checking us out.
Oh, thanks for having me on The Checkout.
Fighter Moss. New music by the saxophonist Kamasi Washington, paying homage to his favorite video game of all time. We thank him for spending some time with us on today's show, and definitely make sure to check him out this Tuesday at the Barclay Center in Brooklyn, opening for Florence and the Machine. I would like to give a special thanks to Bertrand Flamang, Kevin, Arne, all the staff at Jazz Middleheim for making this conversation possible in Belgium. All of the material on The Checkout is archived on our website at checkoutjazz.org, and there you can also watch a music video featuring Street Fighter Moss. And if you haven't subscribed to the pod already on iTunes or Stitcher, do so right now. And while you're there, give us a warm review while you're at it. Follow us on social media. At checkoutjazz is the handle. On Twitter, you can message me on Instagram at Simon Rettner, The Checkout from WBGO on Facebook. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner from Antwerp, Belgium. Thanks for checking us out.